The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavor swirling together with cold brew, topped with a velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles, and that imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. Participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
Welcome to Red Leg Nation Radio, your home for discussion and analysis of Cincinnati Reds baseball all year long. Now here's your host, Chad Dotson.
Welcome to Red Leg Nation Radio, and it's the recess edition with Chad on vacation, so Chris and I have the control board. So what should we do wrong first, Chris?
Just push everything up to 11 first.
There you go. We can spend an hour making fun of Chad's accent.
Yeah, we should do the whole show in Wise County accents.
That's what we could just do the whole thing with a southern drawl. If I was going to do the southern drawl though thing, I should have started drinking about 4 or 5 hours ago.
Yes, exactly.
The more I drink, the more southern I sound. So
maybe watch a Dukes of Hazzard episode or two.
There you go. I like that idea. They're just some good old boys.
It didn't really mean any harm.
No, they did not. But any show that had Waylon Jennings doing the theme had to have been all right.
100%.
So following the Chad model, though, let's start off and talk about the gazillion of transactions the Reds made this week. Art Warren, who, as much as we make fun of him here, has been one of the Reds' most effective relievers.
Went
on the DL on 7/15 with a left oblique strain.
One of those bad oblique strains that it's going to be like the whole season nagging him, or is it just like a little thing? He'll be fine.
I have no idea. I have no idea. I didn't even know he went on the DL till I read this. But he has been pretty effective. I mean, he's thrown 14 innings. He's got 21 strikeouts. He's only given up 3 runs. Now, I couldn't find anywhere that told me anything about inherited runners, but his WHIP is like just barely over 1, and he's averaging 13.2 Ks a 9. I mean, that's pretty strong.
Yeah, he's done a good job. I mean, I've had a couple laughs at his expense, I suppose, but he's been one of the few Reds relievers, and again, it's a small sample, but who's actually been pretty consistently effective when he's in there.
Yeah. The oblique strain. That I don't remember 5 years ago ever hearing of an oblique strain.
I feel like Barry Larkin or somebody missed like months and months with an oblique. And I may be confusing that with his sports hernia, whatever that was.
Yeah, could be.
Another strange injury you never hear about. But I just feel like it was one of those things, like kind of like the hamstring, which I guess we'll get to, where it can just nag and nag and nag because it's you can't really rest it like you could like you could rest a shoulder.
Yep. So then the next day they activated Mikey Lorenzen and moved Blandino to the 60-day. And the weirdest thing, I mean, and we'll talk more about the Lorenzen thing as we move along here, but the weirdest thing to me was they activated him on Friday, but then they didn't pitch him Friday or Saturday while the bullpen was falling apart.
Well, and that confused me even more in the game when he did come in, because they had apparently treated him with kid gloves for 2 or 3 days for no reason that was discernible. It was just all very confusing. Like, all these moves that we're going to go through, and there are a lot of them, like, none of them really, they don't add up to anything.
Other than scrambling. The deck chairs on the Titanic comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
The 18th, they activated Sonny Gray and sent Lopez back down to Louisville. I mean, he was 5-for-17 while he was here. I mean, I think he was just a victim of options, don't you think?
Yeah. I think they like him. And I think they probably like him better than they like Shogo Akiyama at this point. But, one guy can go and one guy can't.
Yeah, well, and the other thing is, I was thinking, why do they keep hold on to Freeman and send Lopez down? But it's a matter of options.
You wouldn't want to risk losing Mike Freeman.
Yeah, that could turn the tail of the season. Tongue firmly in cheek.
Oh, my gosh. Mike Freeman's 33.
Yeah.
Like, I don't – almost – it'll be 34 in a week or so, so happy birthday, Mike. But it ain't going to happen for Mike. Like, what you see is what you get.
And this is and Chad and I say this all the time, and I know you and he do too. At least if it's a young guy, he's probably going to get better, or at least he's got an opportunity to get better. If you're 33, like you said, you are what you are.
Yeah.
On the 19th, they brought up Edgar Garcia, who had been he's 24 years old and he's on his fourth team already.
Yeah, that guy didn't have a good night.
No, and then he conceded and turned around and got racked up. Then they had to put Mikey back on the DL with his hamstring, and we've talked a little bit about that. But is that, you think that's some kind of record? Like,
it might be. I mean, as far as like how long we waited on him to get healthy and how big it was hyped up and everything else. And, I mean, I was personally, and I kind of got into it with a couple people on Twitter who disagreed, but I really had a problem with them. The way they used him that night, Mike Lorenzen is a good hitter for a pitcher, but he is not a good major league offensive outfielder. Like,
right.
It's a cool novelty. You know what I mean? It's like, it's a horse that can count, but you're not going to hire him to teach math at college. Like, it's a nice little novelty thing, but when they're putting him in the lineup ahead of real players, I don't understand it, and it risks the guy getting hurt. And everyone's like, well, it could have happened anytime. Well, it did happen when he was running the bases, which he hadn't done in a year and a half. So maybe it was a fluke and maybe not, but why? Again, a guy they took 2 days to even get him onto the field, so there's some reason that they were trying to be careful with him. And then they just went out there and started, using him all over the place. Now you don't have a pitcher. You got an outfielder and a pinch runner for a couple innings, but now you don't have a pitcher.
Yeah.
To me, when they're so scarce of the bullpen, they should have taken better care of their toys.
Yeah, I tend to think, I tend to lie on the, it was a freak accident kind of thing, but I absolutely see your point. We don't have enough good arms in this bullpen to risk them in ways that we didn't need to risk them. So, yep. So Mikey, we hardly knew ye.
It didn't look good, did it? I mean, I wouldn't expect him back for a while.
No, and then the weirdest thing was, if you read his comments afterwards, he talked about being dehydrated.
Oh, no. I didn't see that.
He talked about being dehydrated. He said, because the humidity here is so much different than Arizona and blah, 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 blah. And he didn't have time, between pitching and then running to the outfield, he didn't have time to, drink anything. I'm like, oh, please. Come on, guys.
This is what I wonder about these guys who are, like, so, like a thoroughbred racehorse, who are so fine-tuned and trained to the nth degree. Are they also so, fragile that failing to have the proper amount of ounces of the proper hydration in a 15-minute thing is going to, make them fall apart like that?
Well, it throws the chemistry so far off that... You never heard about Joe Nuxall straining a hamstring running the bases or getting a left oblique strain.
No, you didn't.
Because he wasn't in that good a shape.
Yeah, well, I tell people about myself, you can't really strain fat.
That's right. I'm a shape. I'm in shape. Round's a shape.
Yeah.
At the same time, they called up R.J. Alonz, or is that am I pronouncing his name right?
I think it's Alanez.
Alanez. A 29-year-old on his fifth organization, and to do it the way Chad does, he's already been released by Houston, Detroit, Tampa Bay, and Seattle.
Alanez,
thank you. And Perez got sent back to Louisville again. I hope he's getting frequent flyer miles.
I doubt it. All I know is those guys, I saw something the other day talking about how much money they, the difference in salary when they go down for 3 days versus stay up for 3 days and all that stuff. It's real money for those dudes. Like, you know, a day's worth of a $600,000 salary versus a day's worth of a $60,000 salary.
Plus major league meal money and you know, and per
diem. Yeah.
And they designated Jose De Leon for assignment. Anything to say about Jose De Leon?
This season is really racking up the future obscure former Reds.
You could fill out a roster on them just on this year alone.
Oh my goodness.
They sent Gutierrez down on the 20th, down to Louisville. And they brought up Ashton Godot, who was then sent down the following day. Speaking of your one day thing.
Now, is the idea for Gutierrez they want to keep him starting?
I don't know. I have not read anything about him getting sent down. I've been fairly impressed with him. I know he's struggled, but I like the way he looks on the mound. I think he's got good stuff. I think he could be something.
He's certainly better than a lot of the guys we've seen, including one of the guys we saw pitch this week.
Yes, who was activated on the 21st when Godot was sent back to Louisville. He got that one day of major league meal money and major league salary, and you know, probably got to eat in the Reds clubhouse, but got a good meal while he was here. You know, so
got a good seat there in the bullpen.
Yeah. Anyway, so as I said earlier, this all kind of seems like rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic to me. But do any of these moves to you, other than the activating Lorenzen and activating Sonny Gray, do they mean anything?
No, I mean, they really were just shuffling the 25th and the 26th spot on the roster.
Yeah.
Like a different guy every day. And I've seen teams doing this more and more. I mean, the Dodgers have done it for a few years where they effectively have about a 28 or a 29-man roster where they just, once a guy pitches a little bit, they push him off the roster and bring in a fresh guy. Not exactly what the Reds were doing.
Right.
But yeah. There's no other reason to do what they did.
Yeah, Chris Welsh has talked about this when he's been on basically that thing. But there's only two ways that works. One is you have to have a number of really good young relievers that have options. And the other is they have to be good.
Right. Is there still a rule that if you, like, I guess there's not a rule that you have to be on the roster for more than a day?
Apparently not, because Godot sure wasn't.
No.
I think you can't be recalled. Fast.
Oh, they have to stay down for a while.
I think you have to stay down for 10 days or something. Not even positive of that.
And maybe there's exceptions for somebody gets hurt or something.
Yeah. Or if you got to get Jeff Godot or Jeff Hoffman onto the roster. Yeah. You know,
so let's talk about that for a minute. What the heck? Like, it feels like they went to a six-man rotation purely for the purposes of giving, like, finding a way to get Jeff Hoffman into the game.
Well, like, Bell talked about, and I didn't really understand it, and I'll be really, I didn't study what he said because a lot of what Bell says I let go in one ear and out the other.
Same.
But he talked about getting, I think it was Miley extra days rest because they weren't, because they didn't get as much rest. They would have been pitching on short or something like that. And I didn't really understand it, and we all knew it was bullshit. Because he wanted to get Jeff Hoffman back in the rotation.
They just had an All-Star break, first of all.
Right.
So everybody skipped a turn last week. And
why they feel like Jeff Hoffman is the answer to anything is a question to me.
You're asking the wrong question.
Yeah, if Jeff Hoffman is the answer, you're asking the wrong question.
Tyler Malley would have started on 4 days rest if he'd started yesterday.
So he'd have started a day short. He'd have been a day.
Well, 4 days of rest. It would have been his fifth day.
Oh, yeah. It would have been his normal. Yeah. So yeah. I don't know.
I mean, you know, it's another sign of this team not really being committed to doing everything they can to win the division.
Yes. And I think, and Chan and I talked a little bit about this in the past, because I don't think any of us have been banging on David Bell as much as we did last year. But
true.
I think David Bell is doing the best he can with what he has, and when it comes to the pitching staff, especially the bullpen, that ain't much.
No, yeah. And there's things to criticize David Bell about, but none of them are nearly as important as criticizing whoever is responsible for this bullpen.
Yeah, I mean, you can criticize him for the Lorenzen not using Lorenzen on Friday or Saturday while the bullpen was falling apart. You can criticize him for using Castellanos on Sunday, or was that Monday?
I think it was Monday. Same with Lorenzen. Yeah.
So, you know, and the same thing with the way he used, you know, but like you said, if you're going to take shots at this team, what's going on in the field isn't the major isn't the biggest yeah. story.
The deck chairs are not the problem with this particular ship.
Right. It's the iceberg.
Yeah. Oh, man.
The only good news coming out of all these transactions, and this isn't really a transaction yet, but the Reds said that this week Nick Senzel is going to start his rehab in Louisville. And he's going to play center field and shortstop.
Yeah. That's a weird one, isn't it? Like, all these years, they weren't willing, even this year, they weren't willing to try him at shortstop, despite having a clear hole there that would have seemed, we all thought was logical. Well, why not play him there? Why not try him there? And, you know, I guess I'm glad they're finally going to come around and try. I am completely in the got to prove it category for Nick Senzel now. I am not anticipating his return. I'm not excited for his return. I will be excited when he plays 3 weeks and plays well.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. I mean, I really wish the best for the kid. You know, of course, you know, from what Chad has spent time talking to him like that, and says he's a really, really, really good kid. So I wish him nothing but the best, but my expectations could not be a whole lot lower. I just don't think the kid can stay healthy, and that's not his fault. I'll be honest with you. I had the same, and you know, I'm showing my age here, but I had the same problems with Eric Davis. Only Eric Davis was a different level of player. But I my frustration level with Eric Davis when he was playing because he couldn't stay healthy was like kind of like that. Now, you knew when he was playing, he was going to play well, but you know, you struggle with guys that, I'm starting to wonder if Lorenzen's going to kind of be the same thing. You know, he's always so out of shape. I don't know how he ever gets on the mound.
Yeah. Well, I kind of do think that with him. I mean, you could, like with Lorenzen specifically, I mean, you get to such a high level of training and it's like there's no, I don't know, the dude is like
ripped.
Clearly ripped and just like muscle upon muscle, but there's a lot of things that can. Like I said, my body is has a lot of margin for error.
Yeah, I've never pulled my belly.
No, not at all. I've never been able to perform. I'm unable to perform sitting in a chair.
That's right.
But yeah, Senzel. I mean, like I told you, it was you. I'm like, I don't wish him well. I don't judge him for it. But I'm just not going to count on him being able to play.
Yeah, no expectations.
Yeah,
and that's a damn shame because of you know how highly he was anticipated, and the credentials he had coming into the minor leagues and what he did in the minor leagues. Yeah,
number two overall player.
Yeah, it's a shame, and you have to believe from his point, at some point that has to get in your head.
That
you can't stay healthy, and then when you get healthy, you know you can't get it stand the lineup long enough to develop any rhythm, and you know at some point I would think it becomes a mental block.
All these guys who make it this far have mental skills and confidence that is so far beyond the normal kind of question myself that I have. But you're right; it's got to start to weigh on the guy, and it's like what's you know, does he walk down the street and look up for air conditioners to fall on his head or anvils? Like, does he just feel like he's cursed, or is it just, well, I'll rehab from this one and then I'll be fine for the rest of my life? I don't wonder what's going through his head.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like you know. I would think he doesn't accept any deliveries from Acme.
Exactly. Probably some sort of curse on this.
Maybe Pedro Bourbon met him at some point and didn't like him.
Maybe that's it.
Moving into the Reds' wonderful week they've had. We're coming out of the All-Star break. They've won 9 of 11. They took 3 out of 4 from the Brewers in Milwaukee. And they got all this momentum. And
yeah, not so much.
Not so much. I mean, two out of the game one against Milwaukee, Molly has a terrible start. The bullpen's even worse. Castellanos takes a pitch off the wrist, which we've now found out. I don't know if you heard this today. Now they're saying it's a microfracture.
I saw that, and I don't know if that's. I mean, it's obviously not good. But
I saw something on Twitter late today. They've got him in. They said he was in a soft cast, and he'll be out probably about 2 weeks.
I'm not going to sit and bash the medical staff, but like I don't. Whatever was broken that night when they took an X-ray of it.
And they said it was not broken.
Yeah. I'm not a doctor. Maybe it's easy to miss that kind of thing.
Maybe a microfracture, maybe the swelling, you can't see it. Hell, I don't know.
But that's a shame because maybe not. I mean, if he's out for two more weeks, then the messing around for a couple days in the DL really didn't make a difference.
Yeah, if it ends up being 2 weeks, if it ends up being – well, that's the other thing about this team. They play short. I mean, there was no doubt that when he didn't play – and all over the weekend, and it wasn't going to start on Monday. So now you're 4 days in. Why are you going to play short for three or four more days?
That's
just perfect Reds attitude.
Yeah. Well, especially when they've already got 16 pitchers on the roster.
Yeah. And they run out of position players constantly.
They run out of everything. And part of it, I think teams have stopped. Like, managers are clearly managing to this extra innings idea that, like, the game is absolutely going to be over in 10 innings.
Yeah.
And they don't have any plan for what happens after that. You've seen it a couple times when they've gotten to the 12th and they're about to put a position player on the mound in a tie game. And, I mean, you look at that game Saturday night. That game took 4 hours and 37 minutes to play 11 innings. And the Reds had 5 hits in 4 hours and a half.
Yeah.
But David Bell used 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 pitchers.
And that's with a 3-batter rule.
And that's with a 3-batter rule.
Which I hate.
How many batters faced 8 pitchers? Four of those guys faced three batters only. So what in the heck? Like, what would he have done without the 3-batter rule? Whatever that rule was supposed to do isn't working for David Bell. And they just, I mean, part of it's the guys aren't effective, but like, I don't know. Why do these guys have to pitch one inning and come out of the game?
And to be fair, this year he's not been as bad about double switching guys out.
No, other than the Lorenzen thing was the only one that day.
But he doesn't do it regularly like he did last year. Last year it was like a little league game when everybody had to play.
Yeah.
But the bullpen on Friday night threw 4 2/3, gave up 6 hits, 6 runs, all of them earned. That's not a good night for the bullpen.
No, and then on Saturday night was even worse.
Yes, it was. I mean, Castillo looked fabulous.
He goes 6 innings, 5 hits, no runs.
Right.
The bullpen goes 5 innings.
7 runs, 4 earned, 10 hits.
I mean, just set the place on fire.
Yep. And as we said earlier, no Lorenzen either night as the bullpen's burning down.
Well, no, Lorenzen pitched Saturday. That's the game when he got hurt.
Well, I thought that was Sunday. No, you're right. I'm sorry.
I just saw it in the box score.
You're right. I'm sorry. And then Sunday, Sonny Gray was terrible.
Yep.
And the Reds, didn't even score a run.
That one they got smoked.
Yeah. They ran into a buzzsaw. But you know what? You still got to hit the ball and pitch the ball. And Sonny Gray was not good. And if Molly turns south and Gray turns south, we're done.
Yeah. Those are icebergs.
And I'm not saying that that's going to happen. Over one start. But I'm just saying if. So over the weekend, the bullpen went 14 1/3, gave up 21 hits, 16 runs, 13 earned. That's an ERA of over 8.
Well, it didn't get any better Monday night.
Well, the other thing I noticed, and I looked at it in the series against the Brewers, you aren't going to beat many people when India goes 2 for 11, Winker goes 1 for 13, Votto goes 1 for 11, Suarez goes 1 for 10, and your hitting leader for the weekend is Farmer going 3 for 8.
Yeah, they didn't play well. They could have snuck out with that game. Well, they could have won the game on Friday until Osich and Hendricks set the place on fire.
Yep.
And then Saturday they lost in extra innings. So, like, that's the thing. They didn't hit well, but they were in two of the three games. You know, the thing with the bullpen, it's like, I suppose what Bell is thinking is, I'm going to use seven relievers in this game because none of these guys are very good. I'm going to get a matchup if I can, and then I'm going to get them out of there before they melt down. But you roll the dice so many times with bad relievers, and one of them's going to blow up every night.
Odds are.
And if you let seven of them pitch, at least one of them is going to blow up.
Yep. Then Monday Gutierrez was bad in the bullpen again. Seven innings, nine hits, nine runs, seven earned. Gave up four home runs. Reds pitchers Monday night gave up seven home runs, and the Reds scored 11 runs, but only four of them were earned. And they had 16 hits, and the Mets made four errors, and they only got four runs. Or they only got four earned runs. They only got 11 runs. So,
four.
And then Miley threw a really good game on Tuesday.
Isn't it funny that he's probably the most consistent pitcher they have on this team?
Well, and he's, you know, if you go by wins above replacement, he's their MVP.
Is that right?
Yeah, he leads the team in wins above replacement with five.
Well, good for him.
You know, Castillo and Miley. Castillo in June has got an ERA of 1.76 in 56 innings. But he's only 2-2, and the team is 5-4 in his starts. Miley for the season has an ERA plus of 1.74 and leads the team in wins above replacement at five. It's according to Baseball Reference. Now Miley's making $8 million. They got a team option for him for next year at $10 million. You think they pick up the option or do they trade him at the deadline?
That's a good question because we'll see in the next few days, but that's a good price. I didn't realize he's almost 35, but I feel like that's a good price for a quality starting pitcher who's going to give you 175, 180 innings this year.
And you're only having to do one, you know, pick him up for 1 year, only pick up the team option.
To me, that seems like a good deal. You could always trade him again.
Yep. I did find it interesting, though, that Bell brought in Garrett in the ninth for the save on Tuesday with his 13.5 ERA in the ninth, and he's given up five home runs and 40 plate appearances.
Yeah. I mean, it is interesting. He pitched very well.
Once Derek Johnson went out there after he threw five straight balls.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe you should just say that. Whatever you said to him, just say that to him before he goes out there.
Yeah, say it in the dugout.
Yeah.
But the thing, and even though they won Tuesday, I have to bring up the horrendous base running. Aquino got caught between first and second and an inning, and then I think it was the seventh, Suarez led off with a ball that came a foot from going out and gets thrown out at third base trying to stretch a double into a single with no outs. I mean, that's just stupid.
It was really, both of them. I don't know what Aquino was thinking.
No, I don't either.
Suarez, I mean, that's just, you know, I know everyone likes to question the stereotypical, you know, the established rules of baseball. You know, never make the first or third out at third base.
Yep.
And so now, you know, we all question or try to be smarter than the traditional rules of baseball, but that's a pretty darn good rule. And I went and looked that up, and when you sort it all out, you know, the difference between success and failure, you basically have to have about a 77% chance of success to take that chance with nobody out to try to go from second to third. And if you're not going to have like almost an 80% chance of getting there, it's a mistake, and you're it's a bigger risk than the reward. And I just don't see how. I don't know what he saw, and I don't know if the third base coach waved him over, but to me.
And the play was in left center field. I mean, so he saw it as he was making the turn at second base.
Yeah, you know, the ball kicked off, and by the time the guy picked the thing was, by the time the guy picked the ball up, he was really shallow. He had to come back towards second base, towards the infield, to pick it up. And I think that's why it was why he was dead, because the guy didn't have to throw it very far.
Yeah, the Mets center fielder made a really nice play. I mean, he made a really hustling play to get back to the ball and but it's just it wasn't a smart play, and we're not good enough to play that dumb a baseball and win ball games.
Nope.
So and then the last game against the Mets, Jeff Hoffman started, and the Reds got one hit. So you know.
Yeah, that I mean, you know, Stroman's good. I always wanted the Reds to get Stroman, and they didn't. And that's what happens when you go against Stroman. He'll dominate you sometimes.
Yep. Let's cover a couple other things, and then we'll go to viewer mail, if that's okay.
That sounds great.
Quick on the Castellano injury. Can this team stay in contention with him on the bench for 2 weeks?
If Jesse Winker comes back to life a little bit and Kyler Naquin stays hot, yeah, I guess. But Castellanos is really good, man.
Yeah. I knew that Jesse had been struggling. And I'm a big Jesse Winker fan. And in the last month, his numbers are 170, 270, 284 with two home runs. And his numbers, yes. I mean, all of his numbers have decreased every month since April.
Yeah, you know, I'm just looking here. His season numbers are worse than they were last year, other than batting average.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of been quiet because he's had a couple big hits, but he's struggling.
The flip side of that, though, I think is Jonathan India. The more I watch this kid, the more I like watching him play. And since they put him in the leadoff spot, he's been a revelation, I think.
Oh, gosh, yeah. You know, and I wasn't a big believer in him. His minor league numbers were never anything spectacular. So I was like, well, another failed draft pick? What's the deal? But, gosh, he is fun to watch. You know, I think guys like to talk about things like energy and personality a little bit, but he's legitimately seems like he is providing a boost to his teammates just the way he plays and the way he goes about things. And I heard Trent Rosecrans on the radio broadcast yesterday, I think, or might have been Tuesday, talking about India and how, like you said, how he really jumped after they put him in the leadoff spot. And you know, there's a couple theories they were talking. One was, well, you just need to ask him to do a certain thing. And the thing they asked him to do was get on base. And so he decided to get on base. And the other interesting theory was that he's very, almost like a nervous guy, pacing around the dugout and so forth. And by getting him into the game immediately, it kind of, it helped him focus and helped him kind of get comfortable in a game. By being the first batter of the game, and you know, like they see a quarterback needs to take contact, like that kind of a deal is how I heard it.
Well, his for the season, his OPS plus is 113, which I would not have predicted going into the season that he'd be 13% over average. But since he took over the leadoff spot, his numbers are 298, 447 in on base percentage, 454 slugging. He's got a 901 OPS since going into the leadoff. Spot and that's 180 plate appearances. So that, I mean, that's it's still a small sample size, but it's not a tiny small sample size.
No, and if you look at the thing, he's the fourth in the major leagues in on base percentage.
You think he's got a chance at rookie of the year?
You know, I think he should. I think those things are always so weird. It's always so narrative driven with rookie of the year, and I feel like there's always a pitcher who has a good year and kind of gets an inside track on that stuff if there's not a clear runaway winner of it.
Yep. I wanted to talk about the Reds' attendance because, you know, all of us have talked about the tightness of the front office and the ownership, and and how frustrated we are by it. And I think the Reds drew over 100,000 people for the Brewers series, and they drew over 56,000 for a weekday series with the, that it would, included a day game that drew 20,000 against the Mets. Here's my question to you. Is this Reds fans just enjoying having a competitive team that are blind to what we're calling the Castellini greed? Or, as my wife says, after COVID, do people just want to get out of the house?
I think it might be the latter because, I mean, if you look in the Cubs series, now they always draw well, but the Cubs series before the break, over the holiday, they drew real well that weekend too.
Yeah, but Chicago, when they play here on the weekends, they always...
But the Braves the weekend before, you know, they had, 85,000 for that series. And so I think people just want to go to ball games again. I mean, I've gone to two Columbus Clippers games this week, and I couldn't tell you one player on the roster, but I just wanted to go watch baseball. And I think a lot of people are the same way. And the Reds are fun. They're a fun team. They're an exciting team. They're not a boring team or a losing team. So,
well, and the other thing is, and as much as we bang on the Castellinis, they have made the experience at the ballpark, improved it tremendously while they've owned the team.
Oh, absolutely.
But here's my next question to you. What percentage of the people that go to the Reds games go for the games, and what percentage of them go for social reasons?
It's a good question. I mean, I think it's more of the latter than the former.
Yeah, I do too. I want to talk one more thing about that, a little bit more about something on the Reds local media. I was listening to the game. I had the game on TV the other night, and I've really, really am impressed with John Sadak's preparation for the ball games. But I think he really needs to be careful that he doesn't become an apologist for bad performances by this team. I was sitting there listening to him and Larkin the other night talk about how effective Osich has been. And I said, really? And I went and looked. And I mean, it's ERA plus is 97, which isn't even average. Now, it is 10 better than his career. But he's given up 8 runs and 7 earned in 12 innings. I mean...
Yeah, let's not go overboard with that.
And I see Sanek doing this a lot for guys, especially guys coming out of the bullpen. You know, I know he doesn't want to be banging on the players, especially in his first year, but I think he's going to have to be real careful that he doesn't turn into, you know, and I don't mean this in the way it's going to come out, but turn into George Grant. And George Grant is a wonderful man, and he's a great, you know, I've met him, he's very, very nice. But he never had a bad, you know, he never called anybody out when they needed
him. No, I agree. Well, the thing about George, I'll say, I don't know that George, other than the thing that almost every announcer does where they overpraise the outfielder who was known for having a bad glove when he came to the team. Like, there was all those guys. Oh, you know, Ryan Ludwig, he has a bad reputation, but he really has done a fine job. Other than that, I never felt like George would tell you a guy was good if he wasn't.
Yeah.
He would just tell you he was a nice person.
Yeah, and he couldn't tell where the warning track started.
No, that's true. But, you know, yeah, I that is fair. I think I've been very impressed by John Sadak.
Me too.
I think he'll be better when I think he gets a little more comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
He'd probably be better with Welsh than he is with Barry. I don't think Barry, as an old wrestling saying, he doesn't really help his guy get over very much.
Yeah.
Yeah, that stuff, I don't need that. Like, yeah. You know, I definitely didn't like the predecessor's approach of just immediately just being offended by bad play. Like, personally offended by someone not succeeding at baseball. That gets old. But don't tell me that, you know, the sky is red when it's blue, when I can see it. That part I don't need.
Yeah, don't on my leg and tell me it's raining.
Yeah.
Now, I saw something. I did not hear this because I was not listening to the game that night. But I saw something on Twitter that apparently JB was on, Johnny Bench was on the broadcast the other night.
I didn't see it either, but
apparently
I
had some comments about ownership.
Oh, I didn't hear that. Oh, yeah, he did say something about not getting a shortstop or something like that. Yeah,
and you know, there wasn't a word in the local media about that. Not a word. Yet, they wrote an entire article the next day about the Mets announcers degrading Skyline Chili.
Yeah, well, you got to know what's important.
I guess you do. But I would think if Johnny Bench had something to say that the media would have, given that a little bit.
Those are always tricky because the guys who cover the team aren't watching.
That's a good point. I never even thought of that.
Somebody has to tell them about it, and then they have to hear about it. And I remember when I was in San Diego a few years ago, and when I was living there, and Rick Sutcliffe would periodically would be a guest in the booth, or he'd cover a game on the Color Man. And he one day had been playing golf with Bill Murray.
Oh, my.
And had really been enjoying their afternoon.
Had a Joe Nuxall kind of day.
And stopped by the ballpark and wandered into the booth, and nobody really kind of got realized his situation until he was on the air.
Were you listening to this game?
Yeah. Oh, it was something. Yeah. And he was talking. He went into this like talk about George Clooney going over to Africa to solve the situation over there, and it was like a Bill Walton game, but different.
Without the pot?
Yeah. But the funny, like, it took a while for that story to get through the, like, local media. Like, it was kind of online, and I think Deadspin was writing about it. But the San Diego media didn't – they had to, like, pick it up secondhand because nobody who would write about it was – actually heard it.
Yeah. I never even thought of that.
Yeah, so I don't know. I
mean, Joe Nuxall dropped a beer on – it was before my wife and I knew each other, but he dropped a beer out of the booth and hit my wife on the head one time.
Oh,
he leaned out and goes, "I'm so sorry."
I'd give anything to listen to him call another game.
You'd be riding in the car and you'd have the game. You'd think you switch over to took the game on and it's so quiet. And
it goes
on for like 45 seconds and you're adjusting the knob,
it's the right station. Then you turn to another station and it's super loud.
Or you adjust it and then he said, "Oh, that one's low and outside 3-2. Anyway, should we do some?
Let's hear from the viewers.
The viewers. I won't call it viewer mail. I'll just to aggravate Chad. We'll see. We'll talk these from our friends at Patreon. This is episode 385. Who would ever believe that we could do this thing for 385 episodes? And people would listen.
People listen to it.
Okay, let's start out here. Joey Gadicha says, "Hey, Chris and Bill, hope you're both excellent." I'm excellent. Are you excellent, Chris?
I'm excellent. Thank
good.
You.
"What is more painful, watching the Reds crumble here after the break or knowing that help for this team isn't likely on the way either?"
I don't know. The lack of help on the way is a very kind of frustrating undercurrent to everything else that happens. It's I can't get too high about anything in this season because I know there's just no there's going to be a time where they run out of fuel and there's nothing left in the tank.
Yeah, and you know three of their best relievers are hurt now, two of their best hitters are hurt now. You know, their other best hitter has been in a slump for at least a month.
It's not ideal.
No. You know, but this team is, you know, look at last year. You know, they all of a sudden they turned things around and won, you know, a buttload of games at the end of the year. And who knows? And this division is not, you know, and their schedule is in their favor from basically from here on out. So who knows? But I can't get real frustrated about the fact that I know help isn't likely on the way because we knew that all along.
Yeah, yeah.
Mike Perry asks, "Has anyone checked on Nick Kroll? I think he needs a hug." I haven't. Have you checked on Nick Kroll?
I haven't, but I think he probably does need a hug. I think anybody in that job working for that fellow probably needs a hug.
Now, Chad, and I haven't used these exact words, but Chad apologizes for Nick Kroll a lot. But at some point, wouldn't you have to take your self-respect and go home?
Well, that's an interesting question, isn't it? I mean, you see that in a lot of places in the world, different jobs, and you think the guy's selling himself. Number one, this is the job I've been working for my whole life, and I finally have the chance.
And that's a point that Chad makes.
And I'm doing a pretty good job under the circumstances, and how bad would it be if I quit?
And would I be able to get a job somewhere else at any comp, you know, commensurate level?
I don't think he would.
No, I mean, what has he done here that would get him another job?
Right. He's not. I mean, even Dick Williams, who had several years of success-ish, left the industry.
Right. Yeah.
I don't think anybody in Nick Kroll's family has investments in properties and other ventures that he can get work on.
Not as far as I know, but you know, I said to Chad though, at some point though, when Nick Kroll's standing up there behind the podium, he reminds me of the guy that was Saddam Hussein's, minister of information.
Baghdad Bob? Yeah.
Yeah, Baghdad Bob. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, no troops there. That's misinformation.
Rex Scott asks, Bill and Chris, thanks for taking our questions. I know this isn't a widely held view, but I remain an Amir Garrett fan because of his skills, size, and attitude. His recent performances also give me hope. I'll be surprisingly grateful if we get more bullpen arms before the deadline, from your mouth to God's ears. But think Garrett can be part of its rebirth. What's your take on him, and is there anyone else in that patchwork crew that has any long-term potential? I think Garrett is what he is. I mean, I think he can be really effective against left-handed hitters. I don't think he can be a closer. I think he's proven he can't pitch in the ninth inning, and it's got to be mental. I think
that's where I think he's very talented.
Yep.
But I do think something, at least this year, has gotten in his head, and he can't throw strikes. He can't. Yeah, I mean, he's just obviously struggled. So. I do think he's really talented. I think he's as talented as anybody on that roster in that bullpen.
And so, you know, talking about other guys, the guys that I like are all hurt.
Yeah, I mean, I like Anton a lot. I think he's
really Sims.
Good. I do too. I think he's had a little struggle. I wonder.
He has the strangest motion, one of the strangest motions I've ever seen. His motion reminds me of Mike Marshall that used to pitch for the Dodgers. It's like he short arms the ball up there.
Yes.
It's a very strange motion.
It's like that. Yeah, Marshall used to teach it.
Yep.
You know, he was this like rogue pitching coach for years and years.
Yep. They did a thing on him on the HBO Sports thing that Brian Gumbel hosts.
Real Sports.
They did a thing on Mike Marshall. Famous from Ball 4.
Yep. Well, they had his whole thing was like this straight line delivery where like the arm didn't come wrapping around the body as I understood it. It was almost like a
fulcrum, what is the thing that shoots your they shot the cow with in Monty Python and Holy Grail.
The catapult.
It's kind of a catapult thing.
Yeah. It's like I don't know if Sims went to Mike Marshall school or something, but
that's kind of what it looks like to me.
Yeah, the one thing I wonder about Sims is I'm slightly dubious of these guys with the super high spin rate, given the recent crackdown on Stick'em.
Yep.
I don't know if like it's possible that Lucas Sims was a guy who figured it out, quote unquote, by putting pine tar on his finger, and if they don't let him do that anymore, he won't be as effective.
See, I worry more about Anton than I do Sims.
Okay, that's possible too.
Yeah. Is there anybody else in that bullpen group that you think has long term potential?
Oh gosh, I don't know. You know, you see these guys, and I'm like, well,
Santion's 24.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything I liked with him, really. Some of these other guys, like Hendricks, I guess, sometimes. Some of these guys look good. Hembree, I guess. He strikes a lot of people out. But then the next day, they get their brains beat in. So yeah.
Hendricks is at least only 26. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
We kind of covered Ronnie Jesse's question, but I'll please talk about Jeff Hoffman starting Wednesday. Why did that happen? Well, that's a question we don't. Ronnie, we're with you on that question, brother.
Yeah.
James Urban asks, is this the worst Reds bullpen of all time?
Ooh.
I can't spank all time, but it's the worst one that jumps to my mind.
Yeah, I can't think of one. I mean, all of the bad bullpens, all of them that I can remember, there was at least somebody in there.
Right. Yep.
Like, what? I would kill to have David Weathers.
Yeah, because he was good. You know, he would give you 2 good days out of 4, you know.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Ross Ohlendorf or Jumbo Diaz would be a good reliever on this team. It's pretty bad.
Yet we just keep running the carousel a little.
I mean, these guys are like a whole bullpen full of J.J. Hoovers.
Yeah, and when he was really bad.
Bad J.J. Hoover, not the one that started out, but the one that went bad.
Who is, and I think he's pitching for the Florence Freedom now.
Is he? Excuse me, they're the Florence Yalls?
Oh, the Florence Yalls, you know. Or did he sign with the, no, wait a minute, I don't know if he's with them, or did he sign with the team that Brandon Phillips is with down in Lexington? Anyway. Will Alderman asks, guys, is it possible that if Nick Castellanos' injury sidelines him for a few weeks, it would be to our benefit for the next few years as he wouldn't have the career year MVP staffs and thus opt out of his contract? Also, we all know that BS Bob isn't going to do anything to improve the team this year. Do you think it's possible he goes for it next year?
Number one, I don't ever want to be so clever where I'm trying to say, like, don't be good this year because it'll be better next year. You can't do that.
Do you think he opts out?
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, he does seem to enjoy himself here. I don't, you know, it's success. He hits well in the park, clearly. I don't know. I mean, I guess if he wins the MVP, he does. But I don't know what the market will be like.
And who knows? And for the second question, I don't see any reason to believe that Castellini is going to spend much more money next year, but he won't have the excuse that, you know, he didn't have anybody in the ballpark.
No, I don't. Look, I mean, at this point, how can I say this?
And even the local media is starting to talk about him not spending any money. Lance McAllister is all over him. Even Paul Dougherty is addressed it in his columns.
Let me say this the best way I can try to say it. I don't.
Here comes a lawyer answer.
I don't think that as time goes by, Bob Castellini is going to be making any decisions that we like better than the ones he's made in the past.
Yes, I think that's a very kind way of putting it.
Yeah, I think what you see is what you get, and it may just get worse.
Yes, it could. Kyle Kapler asks, are we positive that Nick Kroll is good at his job? And we kind of already covered that. The number of head-scratching decisions and transactions has me wondering why people like this guy so much. The deck chairs on the Titanic again is all I can say.
I don't know. I mean, is anybody like him that much? I feel like everyone is, like, neutral at best. Like, I'm going to reserve was like the strongest praise he gets. I don't know.
The biggest, the person that's been most positive about him has been Chad, that I know of.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, the best I'll say for him is, like, I don't know who you're going to get that's better.
Right. Yeah. And if you're and to be fair, if you're handcuffed by ownership, you could pull out the name of the best general manager you've ever heard of. It ain't going to make any difference.
It's not.
If the deck is stacked against you.
Yeah. The differences they can make is all in player development. Because it's hard for an owner to screw that up.
Yeah.
Unless they march shot it.
Yeah, and just cut the budget to nothing. Excuse me. Yeah. Seth Shaner asked, the season has been a combination of really fun and infuriating at the same time. Yes. Can you remember a year like this one? We've had surprising performances like 99 and years when the Reds were supposed to be good but underperformed. I can't recall a year where it's so obvious why the team plays well sometimes but totally understandable. Bob gave away top relievers when they blow it. I can't remember a year since I started watching baseball and listening to baseball in 68. I can't remember a year. Now, it's been, you know, the last 30 years probably that I've paid the closest attention. But I can't remember a year where I felt that ownership completely failed the team like this year. Not in my memory.
No, not ownership. I mean, the 06 season is probably the most disappointing one like that I can remember in terms of the team should have been pretty good, and it didn't get things done. And that's the year that Krivsky went out and got Majeski and Royce Clayton and all those dudes, which was just, you know, obviously a disaster.
Yeah.
But they tried, you know.
I guess that's a good question. Is it better to make a bad trade or no trade, you know? Nicholas Sparks asked, longtime viewer of the podcast, new to Patreon. I hope everyone's doing well as much as the Reds are in need of traditional bullpen help. Might the Reds benefit more long-term with late-season call-ups by having a bullpen game and having Green, Lodolo, etc. pitch 2 or 3 innings apiece? Thoughts? Theoretically, a better look at how their stuff plays and a bit more in line with their future roles as starters. I don't see the Reds doing that, do you?
I don't either, but I mean, if I was going to do it, and if this was a video game, anyway, where failure on a human being's career and injuries weren't really a risk and I didn't have to explain it, what I would do is bring both those guys up right now and tell David Bell 2 or 3 inning outings out of the bullpen right now. Because I think they'd be better than the guys they've got.
Well, and our pitchers, you know, most of our pitchers aren't getting into the seventh anyway.
Right. I would say, you know, heck, what if you did this? What if you just said, Green, you've got the 7th, 8th, and 9th. And if Tyler Melly doesn't get through the 6th, well, then you use Heath Hembree and CNL Perez and all these other characters to pitch 2 innings. Or 1 inning. Or 1 inning.
Just
whatever
to get
is,
you to the 7th. Like, yeah.
You know, and you're like, go 3 innings, dude. Knock yourself out.
On a 1 to 10,
we'll get you if you get in trouble.
On a 1 to 10 scale, what do you think the chances are of Green being up before the end of the season, with 10 being sure and 1 being no way?
I guess 2.
You don't think he'll be up before the end of the year? I would say like 7. I think there's a pretty good chance he's up here in August.
Well, I'd be excited.
But I don't think Lodolo. I think they think Green's got stuff that he could really help him in the bullpen. And this is just me, my head. I'm not ready. I don't think they see Lodolo as being a help in the bullpen. And my guess is they're worried about this blister thing.
Well, that could be true.
But I said, this is just me. This is all in my head. It's nothing.
Well, so Hunter Green's made 6 starts at AAA. And he's pitched... What? No, 7 starts at AAA and 41 innings. So I got to think they want to see more than 70 innings out of him above A-ball before they put him in the majors. I wouldn't. But everything the way the Reds have developed players over the last 25 years says that he's going to spend...
Can you say that last part again, Chris? You cut out there for just a little. You said...
I said this. Everything about the way the Reds have developed players over the last 20 years tells me that they want him to spend the rest of the year in AAA. But I really hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, you know, And again, this may show you how intent they are on staying competitive and winning this division.
Yeah, but wouldn't y'all go of a piece? Wouldn't they also be trading guys and trying to bolster the bullpen other than just calling up one guy?
One would think.
I don't care how great he is. He's not going to make this into a good bullpen.
No. And maybe if they bring him and Lodolo up, if they think 2 of them can be successful, that can get them through. I don't know. We know they're not going to do anything that's going to cost them any more money. I mean, we just know that. Right. Now that we've depressed ourselves, we'll end on a pretty cool question from Rich Thompson here. He said, "If you had the opportunity to play catch and have a chat with any former or current Red, who would it be, and what would you chat with them about?" You want me to go first while you think about
it? Yeah, go first. Go first.
Mine would be, I think, Bucky Walters. Because I would like to know what it was like to play for the Reds before the Second World War at Crosley Field and to be as good as he was. I mean, he was an MVP. You know, he would have won a Cy Young. They didn't have Cy Young then. And he was just a completely amazing player. And to play on those 39 and 40 teams, we don't know, and we don't know as much about those as we probably should. I'd like to know about that. I'd like to know about living in Cincinnati then. I think all those things would be really interesting to talk to him about. And what baseball was like then. And what it would be like to be a major league baseball player.
And he, you know, he was a third baseman at first.
Yep.
Which would be a pretty interesting conversation too.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, if you want to read a good book about that era and those teams, Billy Werber, who was the third baseman on those 39 and 40 Reds teams, he wrote a book late in life that is actually pretty good. He's a really intelligent guy. After baseball, he went into the insurance business and became a millionaire, basically.
What's the name of the book?
Let's see. There's three. But Memories of a Ball Player, I think, is the one that I read. And I got it, you know, public library. I think I got it electronically and put it on a Kindle.
Cool.
But
check that
out. Yeah, he went hunting with Babe Ruth played with Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig. He was on the Yankees early. And he went hunting with Eisenhower, apparently. So he's a pretty interesting dude.
Yeah. So what's your answer to this question?
So I'm going to cheat.
Okay.
Completely cheat.
Okay, going off the grid.
I'm taking a guy who played one game for the Cincinnati Reds.
Okay.
Christy Mathewson.
Ooh, there you go. But he did manage them.
He did manage them. I think that would have been fascinating to learn about those New York Giants teams around the turn of the century and you know, John McGraw and all that. And just what the whole thing was like being a college-educated guy in a Major League Baseball that was an odd mix of really educated guys and really uneducated guys.
Yeah.
I just think that would be pretty interesting.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Before we get out of here, I want to hit you with one other thing. And I'm stealing this from Lance McAllister. And he talks about he feels like Major League Baseball misses a PR opportunity over the All-Star break. And he thinks, you know, they play the Futures game on Sunday, and then there's the Home Run Derby on Monday and the All-Star game on Tuesday, but there's nothing on Wednesday. Why not move that Futures game to Wednesday, promote it through the All-Star game? You could even do, you know, the draft that day, even though I question how much the draft is really a draw. But
right.
I think that's a great idea.
I do too. Why not?
I've never understood why they play the Futures game on a day that Major League Baseball is playing.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. Why not do it the next? I mean, I don't know. Is there something about the kind of momentum of the event that everyone wants to get out of town after the main All-Star game? I don't know. But especially now with the extended break.
Yeah.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, I really think they miss an opportunity. And let's be honest, Major League Baseball can't afford to miss any PR opportunities.
No, 100%. Hey, I've got a fact check on the J.J. Hoover situation.
Okay.
J.J. Hoover is a member, or at least has been, a member of the Lexington Legends.
Okay.
Where his teammates are Brandon Phillips.
My favorite.
And at least at some point this season, Tony Cingrani.
Yeah, and didn't Tony Cingrani get signed by somebody else?
I don't know if he's also spent time with the Iowa Cubs this year, and I don't know which was first.
Yeah, I think I read that he got signed by a minor league team. It must have been the Iowa Cubs.
Well, you know, I watched the Iowa Cubs last night and did not see Tony, but I wasn't looking for him either.
So how many Columbus games do you go to a year, ballpark?
Oh, just two or three.
Do you?
But once the kids' youth baseball season was over, we've kind of been sitting around looking for things to do, and we really wanted to go to ball games. And so we went down a few days ago with the whole family, and then I went with a friend and his kid last night and my boys. So, you know, it's pretty convenient. Now, last night was a complete disaster because the Columbus Crew was playing in their new stadium, which is just a couple blocks down from the Clipper Stadium. So it was a complete and utter circus in downtown Columbus last night.
And Columbus is always known for their great traffic anyway.
Yeah. I have working downtown for a long time, I knew a couple shortcuts, so I was able to kind of sneak around and get parked pretty easily. But I ended up standing out front of the ballpark for about 45 minutes waiting on my buddy to show up.
Wow.
To hand the tickets over.
So I haven't gotten up there yet, but nobody loves minor league baseball more than me. In fact, we're going to be in Florida next month, and I think we're probably going to either go see Jupiter or Palm County. Because they're real close to where we're staying. And they've got something weird going on down there, and I can't figure out what this is. But the Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday games are not open to the public. But the Thursday, Friday, and Saturday games are.
What in the world?
I don't know. I can't wait to get down there to find out what that's all about.
Is that a COVID thing?
I don't have any idea. I mean, why? Well, that wouldn't make any sense either. I mean,
They're official league games, right? They've got umpires and the scores count. They're not.
Yeah, this is what used to be the Florida State League.
Yeah, these aren't scrimmages. These aren't.
No, this is regular league games.
I wonder if it's just so few people show up that it's not worth
the staff.
I don't know. It's not worth paying the ushers and the concessionaires. I don't know.
Florida State League, and I've gone to a lot of Florida State League games over the years in different ballparks. They're not well attended as a rule.
I would imagine. It's probably pretty hot and humid.
But, you know, when we used to go to Siesta Key in Sarasota all the time, this was when the Reds were playing down there. That's when we saw Clinker playing down there. I saw Joey Votto playing at Sarasota. But they also, those teams, they don't market to, like, the tourists. And most of them are in tourist areas. And, you know, if you're down there with your kids, you're dying for something to do with your kids at night. You know, they've been on the beach all day. And they don't market to that, and I've never understood why.
That's interesting. I don't know why they don't do that.
Anyway, so we have proved tonight that we really don't need Chad to do this.
No, Chad's fired.
It's been great talking to you, Chris.
You too, Bill. Thank you, sir.
Anything you'd like to say as we wrap up here?
Support your local minor league baseball team.
That's right. Go out there and have a beer and watch some fun baseball. Good talking to you, my friend.
Thank you, sir.
Talk to you later.
Thanks for listening to Red Leg Nation Radio from RedLegNation.com. Subscribe to Red Leg Nation Radio on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app. And join us for discussion of all things Reds at RedLegNation.com. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Before Shopify, were you wondering, where are my sales at? Now you're selling with Shopify, the global commerce platform supercharging your selling. You have no problem selling online, in person, on social media, and beyond. Gary, easy on the cha-ching.
but my Shopify sales are through the roof.
Start selling with Shopify today and discover how millions of businesses around the world use Shopify to ignite their selling. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.